Good afternoon, everyone. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is December 23rd. So before I dive into the interview that I have today, which is a really interesting guest, I think you all will really enjoy her interview and what she has to share, I would like to remind everyone that this is a time where the battle and bickering between the dark and the light is very much intensifying. It is our responsibility to hold the space of neutrality and not take sides, not get strung into the drama, and not get played by the puppet masters. There's a lot of maligning and attacking and targeting going on the internet. It's really important for us not to participate in that. And if it's between two people, then it should remain between two people as far as I'm concerned. So let's just keep in mind that we are all enlightened souls, and we are the masters that have come here to bring in the new golden age and teach everyone else how to work out conflict and how to be very keen and aware of the black op operations that go down on the internet as well as in physical reality. So that's just an FYI. If you're new to Galactic Connection, we do run a daily blog, and it's 365 days a year. You will find it on the top of the tabs, or you can go to galacticconnection.com/daily-blog for updates on anything from spirituality to ufology to conspiracy and much, much more, quantum physics, you name it. Feel free to peruse our library. We have over 16,000 posts. It's basically a library. You can find a lot of information and educational material on Galactic Connection. Also, we do run the website. It's very enormous. It's a lot of work. So if you feel free to donate any kind of support, no matter what, we would appreciate it. There's a donation button on the top right column. We do provide interviews and spiritual missions and the website, blogging, and all that other good stuff free to the public to assist in the awakening. So with that said, I'd like to bring on our next guest. And her name is Sophie Jane Anderson. She was born and bred in London. Around 1969, she came to planet Earth. And it's funny the way she actually says, "I arrived here." It was a month before the moon landings, and she came from the fifth planet Lyra of the Pleiades system. She was born with her knowledge very much intact and very aware, and also had her gifts intact. She is coming forward today. She would like to educate people a little more on the lion beings, or what she calls the Fellini, and also just kind of clarify some of the misunderstandings that she feels people have about the lion beings and their purpose and what she's here to do. She'd also like to try to find the other five in her team who are here to defend the portal alignment and make sure that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands. This is a very timely interview. I think it's extremely important for all guardians to heed this interview, and I think you'll thoroughly enjoy her. Again, her name is Sophie, and we're going to bring her on right now. Thanks.
Okay, so Sophie, I think how I want to start this out is from the very beginning. And you mentioned that you came here from Lyra. Do you remember where you were prior to this incarnation on planet Earth?
I was back home. I was on Lyra. I've been to other places. I travel around and as part of my duties, and I travel around just to be nosy. But in general terms speaking, I was back home in Lyra before I came here.
Interesting. So, now, how many incarnations have you had? Is this your first incarnation on planet Earth?
It's my first, and it should be my only one.
You hope, right?
Yeah, it should be. Well, the pure reason is I'm not part of an enlightenment process. We're already enlightened and ascended, so I don't need to go through that process. The pure reason of coming here in this incarnate is for disguise and protection. And because I couldn't just turn up, I needed to sort of be here and learn, evolve, and grow.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So now tell us a little bit about your background with your Liren parents. You were mentioning that you came here and you knew exactly what star you came from, what planet you came from, and that you were very aware and awake to your parents from back home. Can you give us a little information on that?
Yeah. Well, one parent in particular, my father, the memories of my mum or mother are very fragmented, I suppose, because they're not purposeful to why I'm here. A lot of information, as I've said before, is not on a need-to-know basis, but it's a case of it's not imperative to the reason I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need to retain it. And in this form, you just purely can't have all the information in this form because it's too vast, because the memories here aren't the same. And also the transference process has just been astronomically difficult. But I remember my father, because one of the reasons I had to is because he's the one that gave the order to be here. He's the one that's directed us and told us, right, you're going, get on with it. I suppose because being the leader of our race, I had to have knowledge of him. You know, I had to remember who he was to maintain that I understood my orders and my directions to be here. As for him, he's kind, he's compassionate, he's fair, but he's very strict. He doesn't take mincing around, you know, it's like his word is law. You don't argue back. He's very diplomatic, but being the father that he is, you don't have the luxury of debate. So unlike teenagers here who will sort of argue with their parents sort of left, right and centre, that is something that just did not happen. You don't have a confrontation. If you're told to do something, it's just a case of, yes, sir, I'll do that, no problem. The only question I could ever ask was why.
And was that received in a okay manner?
Oh, yeah, because it's expected for you to question. If you don't question what you're being asked to do, it means you're not taking an interest in what you're to do.
Mm.
You need to understand the principles, why, where, and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, questions are encouraged, but refusal is just not, it's something that you just don't do. You don't. It's not even contemplated. You know, the decision's made that you're going to do something, you get on, train, and do it.
Right.
If you
right.
fail at doing it, then that's a different issue. But the idea is you don't fail. The idea is you tackle something that you know you're going to achieve.
And you said that your father was very, very old. So how old is very, very old?
He's got to be, God. See, time runs very differently where we are. So my age, 3,500 plus years, is in human terms, but at home that equates to not a lot. He would be hundreds of thousands of years old.
Wow.
Maybe more. It's not something, to be honest, it's not something I've really ever asked.
Yeah.
You just know that he's older. He's not the first of his kind. He's one of a succession, but he is the latest one.
And the, you know, being older in the star systems really represents a much higher state of consciousness, a greater sense of experience, and they so-called earn their stripes for holding, I'm going to use the word, a 3D word of responsibility, for a large group of people. Because it leads me to a topic that many healers are aware of, and some have spoken with me about in private, but have always been a little bit apprehensive to bring it up because it's so misconstrued, and that is being of a royal line. And so can you talk a little bit about that, and do you feel that you are also part of a royal line?
Yes, I am a royal line. My father is, as commented on the internet here, I've seen recently and referred to, the name isn't right, but I'll use it. The House of Avalon, and the head is Devin, I believe they call him.
Okay.
Well, that would be my father. He is the head of the Selene race. Devin is not his name. I don't know where that's come from. But it suits the purpose for the general populace here and what's floating around.
Can you tell us a little bit about the House of Avalon?
It's a royal house. It's on Pleiades. It's on Lyra. That's where the seat of power is at the moment. It has moved around. I mean, our race is all over the cosmos. But he's linked to all of them, either through feelings, psychic connections, technology, or even visitation. And all decisions go via him. His word is final. He has a very high standing of power. And in essence, I mean, to use the term royal or to use the term king is not completely accurate, but it serves its purpose. He is the leader, the ruler, so to speak, and he has abilities which in all essence would be termed godlike. He's the head of the Fellini race, and he makes the decisions based on all of us, and what he says goes. So to use the words sort of ruler and king is a kind of earthly thing, but it does fit. It is fitting. Not all races would have a royal line, but we do. Me being the oldest, I've never ever thought about succession, because as far as I know, that's just not going to happen, because, well, he will outlive me. Because he's older. You know, that's not what I'm here for. It doesn't run that way.
Right.
He's just who he is. He's the head of us, as I've mentioned in other times, the closest translation, the really poor translation that I ever always understand as a baby was the mighty lion. That's a kind of poor translation of what it would be. I'm not going to use Lion King because that is a Disney term, and that was where I would have got that from.
And, you know, just to remind the audience, I had done a conference call a while back, and after researching the royalty in relation to the original Knights Templar, it was always a reminder that if you were born into that position, it was expected of you to always be concerned about the people. And you would not be able to have that position if you did not consider and take care of the people.
Yeah.
So it's,
I've got a feeling which is more recent than something that's been with me all the time, is that the so-called star seeds, there are a lot of the guardians that are here as I am from whatever race, are going to be linked to seats of power or linked to the royalty there. I mean, not all races have a royalty, so to speak. They have elected leaders, or they just have, you know, leaders for whatever sense of purpose.
Right.
The reason why I was sent here is because being the offspring of him, I have, and my siblings have, powers which normal everyday Fellini not necessarily have, but it's also the fact that we are the ones that can be trusted or entrusted to perform the duties that we need to.
Yes.
Basically, it's our birthright. It's what we were born to do. It's what we were sent here to do.
It's like,
and it's conditioning. You know, it's expected of us. There's no need of us sitting in some sort of palatial, you know, landscape, sitting there sort of watching everything. We're out there performing tasks, leading from the front.
Yes. And having that unwavering dedication to integrity.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it's also trust.
And trust,
it's
right.
Who more can you trust? Can you trust a family member, or can you trust someone who's a little bit more subordinate that you've tasked with, you know, performing a duty?
Well, of course, Sophie, that depends on how you define the word family. You know?
Yeah, but families are very close to us, as you know, as is well known by sort of people looking at lions and stuff like that. It does stem from something. The family unit we don't have the squabbles that the families have here.
Correct. Yeah.
Correct. It's an honor system, and I mean, for instance, if I'm told to do something by my father, there is no discussion. There is no debate.
Yeah.
The only question I can ask is why. I can't answer and say I don't feel like that, because you just don't have that. That's not expected. You just go, yes, sir, no problem. What do I need to do? Prepare me for it. Bye bye.
Well,
that's it.
And isn't it also you have the esteem and the respect enough to know that the intention or the persuasion behind it is of purity.
Oh, yeah, you know? Indeed. That's the whole basis of who we are and why we're there. That's why we're known as sort of, I was just about to say the guardians of the galaxy, but I've just picked that up from the film. But that's, you know, that's one reason why we are the peacekeepers, why we are sort of the warriors and the, you know, the soldiers, so to speak. But that's a very loose term, because that dictates that we're very warlike, and we're not at all. We're completely opposite. Our duties are to go out there and confront the dark forces, confront the evil forces, but maintain order and maintain harmony.
Yes.
You know, it comes from being the second oldest race that's out there. We've had a long time to sort of go through all the processes that younger races are going through, or other races are going through.
Yeah, I totally agree. And in fact, I've had many healers refer to the lion beings as the absolute best protectors when you need assistance for, like, psychic attack. Would you agree with that?
Yes. That's purely because of our abilities. I mean, a lot of how we don't communicate verbally as such. I mean, obviously we can, but most of our communication is empathy, telepathy, and I don't know, it's hard. You can look at somebody and you transfer what you're thinking or what you want to say directly to them, and they know exactly what you just said, and likewise.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's expressions, it's body language, which raises well above normal communication, i.e. there isn't the ability to lie or deceive among the Fellini, because for instance, someone asked me recently, what would be sort of a usual term that you would say to someone, you know, like, see you later or hello and all that lot. Well, in our language here, you can say, oh, I hope to see you soon, but you may not mean that at all. You might be meaning, oh, God, I hope I don't bump into you anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas we don't have that. We express, I hope to see you soon. And that person receiving would know that that was a heartfelt, you know, meaning.
Right.
So we don't have the cumbersome problems of that. It's just portrayed straight across and you pick it up.
It also
makes communication a lot quicker.
I agree. And would you say that those of us that are walking the planet, that are perhaps from Lyra, One of the common attributes would be very compassionate, yet very protective.
They can handle themselves, but they will choose not to. But they would be naturally protective of all others. And if they saw something, their instinct would be to get involved and to help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a compounding sort of fault that you can't really retract away. You do it, well, I know that I do it. I'll get involved in something, you know, not even thinking of my own well-being.
Very true. I know, Sophie, that's so true. That's such a trademark of a guardian, is that we will just jump in both feet, not think of the repercussions as to what will happen to ourselves if we feel that there's been an injustice done to someone else.
Injury, anything of that nature.
Yes, it's just an instinctual response. Now, do you delineate the alien cat people from the lion race, from the Lyrans, from the Fellini? Are they all one and the same, or are they different?
No, they're all one and the same. We're all Fellini.
Okay.
The lion race is the main part of our sort of the description. I mean, it is all one and the same. But there are variations because we are such an old race and because we are spread out so far. Just pure genetics and just pure sort of distance will maintain that, you know, there are variations in looks, there are variations in our strains. The description sort of, the cat people, the lion people all look like upright walking lions with big flowing manes and bright yellow eyes and beige fur is not accurate. It's not strict. It may have been sort of the ones that certain people have come across that have come here, but it isn't a complete accuracy. We do have certain markings, some subtle, some not so subtle. There are variations. There has to be, otherwise you just wouldn't recognize each other.
Right, and it makes total sense. You know, I mean, I'm sure that there are genetics are involved or DNA involved, right?
Oh, yeah, of course there are.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be. I mean, if you've got two differing individuals that have got slight different markings, well, like here, when they mate, their offspring will have a combination of both or either or.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll still be that genetic coding in their systems to pass down. So you will have variations. I mean, my natural look is I haven't got a huge long mane. I've got a short-ish mane, but then that's purely because I'm quite young off here. Yes, I do have a downy, it's not a fur, so to speak, like a cat's fur. It is shorter. It is more downy, I suppose. But I have markings, very subtle markings, and it's not all over my body. But then, so does my siblings. My siblings have slightly differing markings. The noses can be slightly different. The nose colors can be different. Eyes can be different.
They typically show the eyes with a vertical slit going down the center. And, you know, you made a comment about, wow, that it's almost like reptilian. And I really had a strong negative response to that because I haven't seen one of my most major guides. I call him Jonathan. He is a lion, and his eyes are very human-like.
Yes, that's right. We don't have the yellow background and little snake slits on them. They're not. The irises are much more rounder. Our eyes can still see in the same respect, in the same sort of spectrums, but they're not the same as primitive cats here. And I say primitive because cats here are sort of interlinked with us in a very subtle way. as are lots of different species here, which is the whole point why the Earth was populated in that sort of manner. But no, our eyes are different. They do change in colour. They vary. You do have a yellowish look, green, blue, and a grey colour. But they do differ.
Yeah, so, and you took the words right out of my mouth. So basically, like the leopards and the jaguars and the lynxes and lions, they are all interconnected with the Lyran race?
In a way, yeah. They're like, They were sort of put here in a sort of more primitive form to sort of populate the Earth and to make the Earth what it is. I mean, I like to refer to the Earth, other than being used for enlightenment purposes, it's like a reserve. It's like almost like a zoo. It's been populated to evolve into a certain way and allow other things to develop.
Very, very biodiverse.
Yeah. I mean, it's like an experiment in some ways.
Yeah, that a lot of articles talk about that this is the grand experiment on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Now, do you feel that the primitive cats and leopards and so on, do you feel that they have specific abilities even from a physical perspective, you know, compared to the Lyrans? Do they have special gifts that they've carried on, you know, on with them?
Not a great deal, but I think a lot of their communication is similar.
I don't know if have you ever seen that video with the Unconditional Love music piece on it, and it's incredible. It's from the 1970s, and it's two men who had a lion that they brought up because he was an orphan. And they actually brought him up, you know, with them, and he became very used to being with the humans, and you know, they used to play with
him. And they came back to him like 10 years later.
Right. And they took him back out to the wild, and it was very painful for him. And then 10 years later, they returned, and it was just unbelievable. He was sitting there with his family, and he just ran up to them and put his arms around them.
Yeah, I have seen that recently, actually.
I just sobbed when I saw that. I mean, it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. It felt like someone I knew. But anyway, so you mentioned before that you have lifetimes, or you have remembered walking in Egypt. Can you share a little bit about your experience there?
Yeah, I remember visiting Egypt I was very young, so it's about just over 3,000 years ago. Egypt then was very different than it is now. It was very lush, very green, very industrial. It was like a hub of activity, and it was sort of like the center, not the center of the world, but the center of the developing and bustling business world. And it was visited by many different races. And in them days, due to the sort of the pharaoh race that was there as well, we didn't need to hide who we were. Because when you come down, you're revered as godlike creatures, or you were just revered as, you know, honorable visitors. So you could walk around sort of, you know, unaided. It's only as cultures develop that, particularly nowadays, that we've had to start to hide our presence and who we are, because it's just not socially acceptable, and because man has come to a point now where they're so weaponized and so distrusting that anything different would be attacked or tried to be experimented on, etc., etc. And it would be detrimental to humans now. And that started sort of in Roman times. Their beliefs all changed, and they pulled away from the old ways and the old visitors. But it's a shame, but it's meant to change.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what you saw with the Sphinx and the information that's come in regarding what you think is the purpose of the Sphinx.
Part of why I started to, there was a website I came across, and I read loads of information, misinformation on this website, and it made me chuckle. And one of the facts that they put on there is that the Sphinx is the spaceship, or something similar, and it's sitting there waiting to be activated, and one day someone will activate it and it'll fly off. And that's the only way it can be explained. And it has rudimentary sort of linking with my race and saying that it was built by us and that it signifies who we are. Well, that's not strictly true. Well, it's not true at all. It is linked with us in the respect to it was built in a homage kind of way. It isn't a spaceship. It isn't anything particular. It might be hollow inside, I don't know, but if it is, then there's nothing special inside it. It was built out of rock or sand or whatever they used to construct it, and it was built by the locals as a kind of, well, they used to see in us, which to them we were half cat, half human.
Hmm.
You know, we were sort of human bipeds, with cat-like features and cat heads. And the Sphinx is just the flip side of that coin, of what it would be like if a human had, you know, a cat body. And it was just built purely to try and honour us in that respect, to sort of make us feel more accepted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we can be this way, then we could also, likewise, there could also be the other side where it's a half human with a cat body. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing more. It's just something to try and honour us. That was it.
That's
the same way there's other statues depicting other races, although I know there's ones there with reptilian heads and human bodies.
Yes.
But we had quite an influence on ancient Egypt. We were there in good numbers, and we were there most of the time. I personally wasn't. I came and went because I didn't have any duties there. I was just a traveling tourist to try and occupy me and get me away and get me to learn new things and interact with new cultures. That was all part of my diplomatic duties.
Now, were any of the pharaohs actually from Lyra?
No.
No.
The pharaoh race is a different race.
Do you know where they come from?
Not from recollection, no. I know they're not linked to the general populace now in Egypt. They came, they kept to themselves, they interbred, which in this form didn't work out too well because there's limitations on what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And for the thousands of years that they were here, it ended up diminishing their standing because the interbreeding caused issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
And things changed and they went. They had higher technology than was here. They had to use rudimentary tools and rudimentary ways of evolving that technology so as not to stand out too much. But they did. They served their purpose here, and things changed, and they moved back off. They moved on.
Now, Sophie, do you agree that the lion beings also came from Sirius, or you know, because I've heard they're from Lyra, they're from Sirius. I was just curious about that. If you could clear that up.
No, we're from Lyran system originally, very, very long, long time ago. We spread out. I wouldn't say we're from Sirius, but there would definitely be some of us there. But that's not where we originate from at all. Never.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then we're in most systems. Where there's intelligence, we will be there.
And so are the lion beings typically called in as the protectorates, or are they called in because of their wisdom, you know, and their compassion, their great compassion?
For both, really.
Mm-hmm.
For all things. Mostly the wisdom, and the compassion. Mm-hmm. But there are other races out there that are quite capable of protecting themselves, but in this, we use the term 3D realm, we're very much used in that.
Yes.
And yes, that is our duty to go out there and protect.
Why do you feel that, especially in the healing community, that the lion beings are so looked upon as the race or type of being to call in for protection versus anybody else?
Because that's one of our abilities. Our abilities is to project protection to others. We have a life force that we can... We're quite impenetrable in that respect, and we have a life force that we can project out to others to protect them. As like a shield, so they can't come to harm. And it's just one of our natural abilities. Luckily, it's an ability which I brought with me.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've known from very, very young that I'm a protected soul, that I can't come to any harm unless I choose to do it myself. So if, you know, there's certain issues where I can, you know, come to harm if I so warrant it, but in the general aspect, I can't come to harm. I've had that tested in a number of ways. I've been in near fatal car crashes and come out without a scratch or come out with just a bruise. Other situations I've been in, but nothing happens to me. I've never broken a bone. I've never had anything serious happen to me despite being in these situations. And I suppose that I can portray that out to my others, to sort of my family or even anyone I choose. I can actually relay that out to them so that they can be protected as well.
You know, it's funny, Sophie, because I would say the majority of the people I know that are guardians, we tend to have a similar quality, which is we will jump into an adventurous situation and think about the consequences after the fact because of what you're describing. It's almost like a knowingness that we know we're very protected. It's almost like a feeling of, I'm not going to say invincibility because that sounds very egotistical, because that's not what it is. But we just tend to get ourselves into circumstances where we really are so fearless. And I would think this is part of the reason why. What do you think about that?
Yeah, possibly. If this situation arises and I have to make a split decision, then I will just get involved and not even think about anything else.
Exactly.
I don't go into that situation thinking, oh, you know, I'm protected, nothing can happen to me, et cetera, et cetera. I'm immortal, I can go into this. Far from it, I just act out of instinct.
Yeah.
If anything, it is a case of, okay, I am so-called, and I'm using sort of quotation marks here, it's a hand movement, which is a bit silly because it's a recording. I'm using that I'm, you know, protected, but... As I said before, the protection only warrants if I choose not to put myself in the danger.
Mm-hmm.
So if I jumped off a building, then I will probably get hurt because I've chosen to do that. If I fall off a building, maybe a different matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been one of these things that's been embedded in me that, yes, this is the case, but don't test it too much. I've never understood where the limitations are. If I choose to do a bungee jump, there is a small chance that the ropes could snag, the ropes could snap, and, you know, there is the element of death. But if by me doing that bungee jump, is that me then thinking, or is that me then putting myself in the element of danger? so that I could be hurt because I've chosen to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's something like that, then I have to think differently. But if I come across a burning house, which I have done before, I'll run in it and get people out and tackle the fire. Because it's not something I've thought about. It's something I just instantly react to.
Right.
And also my previous job, I had a job where that was the situation you had to put yourself in. So I used to be a police officer, for anyone who understands that. So.
Yeah, and yeah. I was going to ask you, you said that there were specific attributes that you had that showed you that you were not a typical human. Can you go over what some of those are?
I can. I have an extremely rare blood group to the point where I can't give blood and I can't actually get given blood unless they can really find someone close that's got a blood type the same as mine.
Is it beyond the pH? Is it beyond the Rh negative situation?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see very well in near darkness. And always have done, until recently, because I've strained my eyes from wearing glasses, which I didn't really need to wear. I wore them for aesthetic reasons, and I've strained my eyes. But I can still, my eyes will still adapt in near darkness. It just takes a little bit longer now. But that could be age. Oh, God. I've got what's referred to as a Class A1 immune system, which is the strongest immune system they've come across.
Fantastic.
Where the only thing I suffer from is flu viruses. I was brought in, when I was 18, I was actually dragged into hospital to have a barrage of blood tests because they wanted to use my blood to see if it was resilient to various diseases, including HIV, which it couldn't. It couldn't be infected, but in them days, they couldn't keep the blood long enough to see if the infection would take hold.
Wow.
The only other way of doing that was implanting someone with it, but they can't, well, they wouldn't do that, and I wouldn't allow that. So there is a high chance that I am not susceptible to that. I'm not susceptible to any other diseases like that. I've got, for my size, my strength is extortionately higher than normal. It always has been. My muscle mass as in size, but my muscle density has always been stronger and thicker, made me heavier than what I actually would appear.
Mm-hmm.
I have good eyesight, as I said, in the dark, good eyesight in general, and my hearing is much higher in the spectrum. I had my hearing tested when I was younger, and I could hear just below a dog whistle, which was higher than any humans that they tested before could hear. And I had that tested twice in two different locations. And I was unaware at the time. I just knew that I could hear higher.
That's fantastic. I mean, it's like, at what point were you fully 100% clear as to who you were? At what age was that?
From birth, really.
Wow.
The earliest times I can remember, I was always drawn to cats, always drawn to lions, but I always knew, I mean, I'm talking about 2 years old, and I knew who I was, where, I didn't know exactly where I was from, but I knew I used to look up at the sky at constellation, and at the time, being very young, I was always taken by the Big Dipper.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the most prominent in the sky. You could see that. And it was that configuration that I liked. I knew that I was from somewhere else. I knew I was the offspring of the head lion. And I always referred to him in the poor translation as the mighty lion. And that's not the name, but that was sort of the pet name sort of given to it in a way that I could understand it. And it's only sort of when I got a little bit older, about 7 or 8, I used to look up. I was always drawn to a certain part of the sky, and I weren't too sure. Now, Pallades here is not that visible, because being in London, there's a lot of light pollution, but so you can see it sometimes. You can't see it all the time. But if you look at Pallades and you look at the Big Dipper, the actual configuration is very, very similar. So it was Pallades that I was looking for, but being young, I just looked at the Big Dipper. But then once I found Pallades, which for some reason I'm always drawn to, I can usually find it anywhere in the sky. And that's where I knew where home was.
Yeah, it's a very unique star system, you know.
The way
it's a very unique star system, the way it looks, compared to the others.
In some ways, but from here, we can't see all seven stars very clearly. So you see, you know, six of them, and they are in, they do sort of look like the panhandle of the Big Dipper, but in a smaller scale.
Interesting.
But once I sort of saw it clearly, sort of at that young age, then I realized that's where it was. And the Pallades just came into my head anyway.
So are most of the Lyrans with the pointed ears at the top of their head, and, you know, many people are saying that they're excruciatingly tall. What would you say to that?
No, it'd be nice, but no, we're not. We are taller than humans. I've seen things written down that we're 12 to 14 foot tall or 15 to 16 foot tall. No, we're not. We average out between 7 and 8 foot tall. They can go as much as 9 foot tall, as in any race you're going to have individuals that are taller. But on average, it's between 7 to 8 foot tall. The ears are not on the top of the head. They're more to the side, how can I describe it? If you touch where your ears are, and put your fingers from your bottom of your ear to the top of your ear, and then move that to the top where your ear is, then it's placed above there. So basically higher than a human's ears, but not right at the top. And they're not long pointed ears. They're smaller than a cat's ear here.
Mm-hmm.
But we can move them, which is part of communication as well. So we can push them forward, we can pull them back, we can twitch them.
Yeah, I actually, my guide, Jonathan, his ears, they're kind of like hidden by a lot of the hair on the top of his head, the mane.
Yeah, they would be.
Yeah, he has such a huge mane that I didn't even really see them that well. Now, you have a really interesting background regarding your bloodline. You were talking a little bit about how you're related to, I believe you said, Marie Antoinette.
I am, yeah. Here on Earth, I'm a direct relation, a direct descendant to Marie Antoinette.
Wow.
It's not written in the history books. It's something that's been passed down generation to generation. The French Revolution, Marie Antoinette and Louis XIV, Louis XVI. They had some children, and it was reported at the beginning of the revolution, so to speak, that the two children died from illness. Well, they wasn't. They was actually brought out of the country in disguise by the Scarlet Pimpernel and brought into the English aristocracy, but to serve for general reasons, to be brought in as servants.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was that they would stay there incognito, and the name was changed slightly. And once the uprising in France was sort of done with, they would then go back. Well, obviously the uprising never finished, and they never got to go back, so they had to settle in England. So that took a while. We know the story because in Victorian times, the family was just one line and it was very small. But in Victorian times, there's someone we know is old Grandma Lai, and she ended up having 11 children.
Wow.
And from them 11 strains, they've sort of branched out and populated the world with us. But there's still not a lot of us out there, and we are all related.
Very interesting. So do the Lyrans use these particular bloodlines to bring forth, you know, people like yourself to bring you into the 3D reality so you can do your missions?
I don't know, because I honestly can't answer that, because I don't know who the other five are or where they are.
Right.
So until I know, me being the first one of this nature, then it's been used for me. But we're brought in to families that are compatible, or individuals that are compatible, and we're implanted very much like IVF through DNA manipulation. And with me, it was a harder process being the first one brought in like that. Some mistakes were made because I'm the kind of prototype. Because the issues are bringing us in so that we can retain knowledge, but also being in a situation where that knowledge is dormant in a lot of respects, so that we can develop and grow incognito and not bring attention to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made my memory very Swiss cheesed, where I've got lots of detailed memories, but certain aspects of it are not all there.
Now, is this similar to what you refer to as a transference problem when you went through the incarnation?
Yes, that's it. Unlike normal people here that are in the reincarnation processes, where they come to live life after life to attain enlightenment and to learn from it, where each time they come, their previous memories are wiped so that they can then sort of live unhindered. The problem was is I'm not part of that process, was coming in and still retaining the information that I needed. And that was where the mistake went. I'm hoping with my siblings it was corrected.
Jeez. And so now you're on the hunt basically to find the other five in your team, right?
I am. I've since found out that there's another team of six also sent as a backup, which could be because of my transference problems, or it could just be a good strategy to just make sure that there is a backup, because it is such an important battle that's coming forward.
Right.
The only thing, I mean, I know that I don't have that many siblings to have another six. The only thing I can think of is they would be the next closest relations, which would be cousins.
Mm.
Yeah. But I know there's another six out there as well, younger than us.
Very cool. Now, you did also talk about some of your childhood and maybe teen years experience that's kind of gotten you on the path that you are today. And it was very, very traumatic. And you were talking about the apartment that you moved into. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can, yeah. It's trying not to sound sort of out there, so to speak, because I know different people have different thoughts and beliefs. Both of my sides of my family, we've since been told by mediums, et cetera, have strong psychic abilities. My father here on Earth, his family have tremendous abilities. My aunts and my cousins have, you know, powers that I can't utilize, but I share in some similar form. And they experienced things when they were younger. And although my dad's very much of a skeptic and an atheist, his ideals were that if he sees something, he'll deal with it and he'll learn from it. And I had to do the same. You can't criticize something unless you know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, with me, it's since been told that my ability goes off the scale. So I can't be read by a medium, but then I know that because they'll find out who I am. But when I was young, we moved into a block of flats, or a block of apartments, as you would call it, that had been built after the Second World War on a bomb site. Now, for people that aren't aware what a bomb site is, I live in London in the UK, which was suffered heavy bombardment by the Germans in the war, which laid waste to a large amount of the land in and around the city. And it took about a good 30 years for all of this to be built on. So when we were kids, we had large derelict areas of rubble that usually were boarded off, but that we could go and play in. Anyway, the flats that I lived in were built just after the war. And it turns out that they were built on top of a bomb shelter that took a direct hit.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Also very close to my house, just sort of out the back of it, was a church that had been rebuilt, owned by the Church of England. Now, this church, they never used. They used the rectory or the vicarage for training new priests, but they didn't use the church itself because even they recognised that it was haunted, and it was haunted by a priest. And it turns out that the priest that haunted there was also the priest from the bomb shelter, and because there was no accounts of who was there, not everyone was laid to rest. So the easiest way to explain it to people that are listening is, which I was shocked to watch, was the film The Sixth Sense. And the little boy on that, and it very much depicts my life until I was about 6 and a half. I used to get visited night after night. I remember that I used to be able to travel back home. I had the ability then to manifest myself back home as like a protection side of things. And I also remember the door opening and slamming in my room. I remember things going missing and suddenly appear. I'd play with something and it would roll under a cupboard. And you'd put your hand under and it wasn't there at all. It just completely vanished. And I used to get visited at night. I knew the door used to open, sorry. And I couldn't remember a great deal else. The room was always cold, all the usual trademarks. When I was about 18, or 18 and a half, I had a sudden flashback, and it all came back to me. And I spoke to my mum, and her words were, "I wondered if you'd ever remember."
Wow.
And what I recalled was I used to get visited by people that had been basically died in the bomb shelter. But unlike sort of conventional ghost stories where you see these people come in sort of all hunky-dory, they actually came in the state that they were in the bomb shelter. So that people on fire, people with bits missing, reaching out, trying to connect with me to try and pass over and to try and be accounted for. But the problem was, at that age, I didn't know how to perform those duties. So I could converse with them and I could contact with them, but I couldn't help them, so to speak. We had the church involved. We had, like, the house blessed. You know, tried to be exercised, etc., etc., all to no avail. And eventually we moved to get away from there. I've since found out I lost that ability away for a long, long time, but I found out fairly recently that I can still do it. And if I try and if I put myself in that position, I can still connect with people like that. And what was strange, because I think things go round in circles, is that my son, when we had him christened by a young priest, and just in general chat, like where you're from, etc., etc., he was actually in training at that vicarage when I was a young kid.
Whoa.
And he filled in some of the story. We actually visited, me and some friends when we were young, we actually wandered into this church. And strangely, hymn books started opening, music started playing, and then a door, there was an upstairs gallery, opened, and a priest came out and started walking along the corridor to come down the stairs at the back of the altar. And he looked over at us, you know, we panicked because we were only young kids, and as he started to come down the stairs behind the altar, he had no legs. It was an apparition, of which case we then run. And strangely enough, this priest actually remembers us being in the church and us running away. It's really weird.
What a great confirmation for you, though, huh?
Oh, indeed. The other confirmation I had on that is because I've always been compelled to go back there. And the memory I had from inside the church, when I've gone back to the church as an adult, the blueprints and the vision of the inside of the church didn't match the outside building. So I've contacted the Church of England and asked for the, you know, more details about the original church. And they sent me diagrams and blueprints of the church. And it turns out that the church I saw while we was in there was the original church, not the building that's there.
Wow.
And that sort of hit me for six.
I bet. How old were you, Sophie, when you finally left the apartment?
Yeah.
I mean, how...
Sorry, say again?
I said, how old were you when you finally left the apartment? How long were you going through this?
Good 3.5 years.
Oh, my God.
So I left when we were 6.5.
Jeez.
So I had lots of dealings with that, and I've seen things since. But I'm a firm believer that every single person out there has seen something. They just don't know they've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had it from a work experience. I was working in a store. I used to manage a store. And an old gentleman came in, acted very suspicious, walking around, and then walked out. And I followed him out the store. He was only sort of a couple of yards in front of me and got to a corner and turned around the corner. I've got to the corner, turned around, and he's not there. The only doorway had a massive padlock on it, and there was a couple walking towards me. And when I've spoken to them, said, have you seen anyone? They went, no, no one's gone past us. When we've gone back to the store, we've checked out the CCTV. He didn't show up on the CCTV.
That's crazy. And, you know...
And then I've got five colleagues that ever saw it.
No, go ahead.
I said, I've got five colleagues in there that all can tell that they saw him and can all describe him. And it's just one of those things.
Well, there's no question that the veil is getting thinner as well. So those that have not had their gifts fully intact are starting to have these experiences. I remember when I was growing up in Atlanta, and my parents built this house in this neighborhood, and they put me in a room that had an opening to the attic in my closet. And I just remember, see, that's my difficulty, is trying to remember what I've blocked out. But I remember screaming, like almost every single night I ended up in my mom and dad's bed because of what I kept seeing coming out of that attic. And I do remember kind of like a Civil War guy, you know, and he was very depressed, and he kept walking out, and he would literally walk through my room, walk down the stairs, he would go get something to eat, and he would come back up the stairs and go back into the attic. And this would happen every single night. And my parents thought I was crazy, of course. That's crazy. So now let's fast forward. Obviously, you've had some challenges being who you are, and you said that there was just a really bad trauma that went down and really changed things for you. Can you go over that a little bit?
Really changed. It's just touching the iceberg, really, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
Luckily, you're privy to know the information beforehand now. It took you by surprise.
Yeah.
Okay, my name's Sophie Jane, and I am female, as you've already described. I did go, or say, part of me has gone through a trauma. I was always sent here with the knowledge that, unlike other beings, I don't have guardian angels. I don't have someone looking over me like that, but I'm what's known as a split spirit, and that... One half of me is left elsewhere in the ether, and one half of me was here to live, grow up, perform whatever I got to do. And the other half would be there as my guardian to step in if ever I'm in danger or need it. when I meet up with the other five, then the idea was that when we prepare for the alignment battles, is that both halves would combine. I had an issue with a job when I was in the police, someone going for promotion, and put a story about me and lied about me so they could gain promotion, and made something up about me, which in the end I could prove was false. But at the time it was their word against mine. They were higher rank than I was, and they got believed. And it got me dismissed. And that caused me all sorts of depression after that. I'd gone back with evidence to prove that they were lying afterwards. And my evidence wasn't looked at because they said that all the paperwork they had predated the original hearing, and that if I'd had a barrister on my side that was savvy, they could have brought all that up at the time. Well, the issue was I couldn't get all this information before that because I didn't know what was going to be said at the original hearing. And that completely threw all my understanding and foundations and morals and boundaries on everything, because here am I working for an organisation that's supposed to be there for law and justice, yet they're protecting somebody who lied and committed fraud or perjury against someone that's got evidence, which is the truth. And I was always brought up to believe that if you tell the truth and you're honest, that will always prevail. And now I find I'm in a situation where that's not true. And it caused me, it rocked me to my core. And
I bet.
It really went against everything I'd been brought up to believe and everything I believed from before. And it caused me depression, which is something that I hope nobody ever goes through. And I didn't believe it existed. And in turn, that caused a relationship breakdown with my partner. We were together 14 years. And from that, I lost my home. I lost my car. I lost money. And I'm suddenly out there in the world homeless and on my own.
What year, Sophie, what year was that? Excuse me, I just have to know. What year was that?
I lost my job 2010. I lost everything else in 2012.
Interesting. Okay.
And it rocked me to the core, to the point where I was going to commit suicide. And this is where people have to pay attention, where it's going to start getting a bit of bizarre. I'm waiting for a train to come, the last train of the night, and the train was delayed. And I proverbially got a tap on the shoulder from the other half of me elsewhere that said, right, enough's enough, you're not strong enough to cope, I'm taking over.
Wow.
Well, the one that took over is me, Sophie, who's talking. Rather than try and talk in first, third person and confuse people. So I took over. And the way I look at it is, it was driving a car, and all the time the other half of me was driving, and me being Sophie was in the passenger seat every now and then, guiding in the right direction, having a little bit of input, etc., etc. Then it got to the point where I realised that they can't cope anymore. They need to get in the passenger seat and I will take over. They can then recuperate and recover.
My God.
What I didn't realise is that, yes, being a split spirit, as all beings other than angels, we are dual-sexed. I didn't realise until that point that my other half that was off in the ether that protected me was female, which meant originally I was born to this planet in a male body, so I am transgendered.
That is fascinating. So how's your life been since this occurred? Because this is relatively recent. It's only been a couple of years now.
It's been difficult. It's strange because I don't consider, both halves of me are completely separate. The only thing we share are memories. I don't have any of the traits that he had. I don't have protection at the moment, which is, I suppose, why I'm sort of putting feelers out there, because both me and him had completely different ideals. He was the protector, the watcher, the one that was there to do battle, and the one, the logical one. And me being a female, I was the empathic one. I used to deal with situations. I used to be the caring one that used to make decisions and influence and guide. And I was the protector. But now I haven't got that. But I've come here, and literally within 48 hours, I took over. My voice is natural. When no one sees me now, knows that I'm not genetic female. They all assume that I'm genetic. And people that I know, I've shown pictures of my male half and then me, don't believe it's the same person, because they said, well, you've completely changed. Your bone structure's changed, which is kind of unheard of.
Wow.
Your body's changed, everything. My voice changed within 24 hours. It went from a male voice to this. I didn't have to learn. It just is. To the point where my mother here says that I'm not the same person. I am as chalk and cheese compared to the male side. And she can clearly see that I'm not the male turned into or trying to be a female. I am female. I am a daughter. And a son's gone.
That is just amazing. So, like, is your physical body still male? Or has your physical body acclimated to being a female?
I've still got male genitalia, because that's nothing I can do yet. But the rest of it is beginning to change.
Amazing.
I've since found out that I'm what's known as naturally transgendered. I used to produce both hormones. And once this decision sort of came in, the male hormone stopped being produced and the female ones took over. So I was always in a sort of a flux balance, but now it's gone the other way, so the female side's taken over.
You know,
I'm completely different. I walk differently, talk differently, act differently. I'm interested in different things. I mean, he used to be really into computer games, general boy stuff, DIY, fixing cars. I won't do any of that. I'm definitely not going to fix cars. And I stopped playing PlayStations. And I think really what put it, the other night I watched Sex and the City movie for the first time and enjoyed the hell out of it.
Where Steve and Andrew would have been totally bored stiff, right?
Yeah, I would never watch that. Never, ever. I do things that he wouldn't dream of, things that he would definitely never tried before. He was very quiet and used to watch and protect people. Whereas me, I'm much more bubbly and confident. I'll just go into somewhere and just start talking to people and just, you know, I'm sort of the party girl, really am. Complete opposite.
That's, you know, I have a theory about this, because I think for those of us that are here to do some of this really heavy portal work or grid work or anything that's very, very intense and in particular in some sort of conflict with dark forces, okay, I think that we oftentimes will either do something like what you're doing, which is a split spirit, which I haven't heard that very often at all, okay? But I also think that we will hook up with our counterpart to strengthen our force field. I mean, I know I've done that with my husband. I think because we need that. You need that combination of the male and female. It definitely accelerates the power behind your gifts and behind the amount of, for lack of better terms, the amount of frequency that you can manipulate, you know, because you're whole, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like you're a twin flame in one body.
Exactly. Yeah, that is what it is. It confused the hell out of me because I knew sort of that I was split, but I always believed it was a complete twin, but with slightly different characteristics, i.e., you know, sort of being the empathic, the compassionate one, et cetera, et cetera, so that I could get a differing opinion. So basically, the male side, if they had an issue, they used to store it away subconsciously because it was something they didn't want to deal with. I used to deal with it, and then I'd pop the answer into the head.
I'm just cracking up listening to this.
I'm the opposite. I don't have anyone to do that. I don't have the logical thinking approach that he had because I can't rely on him to do it.
Right.
So I'm much more haphazard. But I think that's what's caused me to now sort of reach out and sort of put things on or utilize the internet, right, which is something he would never, ever have done because his attitude to it was, right, we're here for a reason. We will meet up with the five. We will meet up and our abilities will come and things will play out in due course. Well, we've been waiting with that approach for a long, long time and it's way overdue. And I couldn't stick with that. It's a case of, well, no, there's obviously tools out there which we can utilize, information out there which we can utilize. Now's time to actually start correcting some wrongs and actually reaching out and putting ourselves out there. Otherwise, we will never achieve. You can't just rely. Things are buggered up. And the triggers that were supposed to be there, the decisions that were supposed to be made, the roads that were supposed to be traveled at certain times have got messed up. So now I'm having to utilize the tools that are out there to try and attain what I need to do. But he wouldn't have never done it.
Well, the good thing is you did, and you came to the right place. You know, and we'll talk about that in just a second. I did have one other question for you. How do you distinguish the difference between, say, a lion being and an angel, as far as, you know, those that swoop in at the final moment and assist somebody from, you know, a potentially dying or, you know, getting killed in a car crash or something like that?
Well, they're completely different races. Then non-sexual, so they don't have gender. They're completely immortal. They don't exist, or they can't exist on this plane. Or if they do, they can only come at a very, very short period of time. And their duties here are completely different. And their uses are completely different. I don't know. It's like saying, what's the difference between a cat and a dog?
Well, I only ask that because, you know, the angels supposedly do a lot of the, you know, blink of an eye, swoop in and assist and keep somebody from ending a contractual agreement that they shouldn't have ended at that time, you know.
Yeah. Different work, different duties.
Right.
So,
right.
As I'm not an angel, I only know of them. I can't comment fully because I don't have the full understanding of what they are and how they feel. But we are not here to do the same things. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does, totally. Now, one of the things that was very intriguing for me is that you're just so crystal clear on knowing what you're here to do and mm-hmm. the fact that you really want to track down the rest of your team members. And this is regarding keeping the alignment of the portals free from intrusion. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to share this with you.
Well, one portal. We're only here for one portal.
One portal, okay. Now, this is out of the Voyager's book, The Secrets of Amenti by Anna Hayes. A lot of people call her Ashiana Dean. And it's on page 252. It says, in the final phase of the UIR plan, which, by the way, is the United Intruder Resistance, which must occur before the natural 2012 opening of the Halls of Amenti Stargates, if the takeover is to succeed, Earth's portal system will be used to invade the territories of Inner Earth, the control matrix for the Halls of Amenti Stargates, which are the real object of the UIR conquest. Once Earth's portals are used to invade the inner Earth's Amenti temple generator complexes, unannounced pole shifts on Earth will be rapidly set in motion via the Nibirunian battle star, and a stunned humanity will have little more than 3 days in which to contemplate what just hit them. Do you want to comment on that?
I've not actually read that myself. I try not to read stuff on the internet as much as possible. But it's very descriptive and very much the same thing as what I've been informed and what I know is happening. The shift in balance and the shift in difference will be very rapid, and the awakening of the general populace will be almost instantaneous. It's like one day they'll have these beliefs that this is life, and the next day they'll be confronted with something that's so radical that they have no choice but to see things differently and to react. The idea, hopefully, is that although that is going to happen, the idea is that the portal will be closed off, they will be banished back down, and we will attain control of it, or keep control. Well, I say keep, we haven't got control of it now, not fully, but we will gain full control of it, so we don't have the aftermath. And it's the aftermath is what we're trying to avoid, because that is the end of existence as we know it. Because it would mean the end of travel, the end of movement between place to place and realm to realm.
Now, Sophie, I want you to know, I know you've never read this book because you and I talked about it before.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another excerpt. It says, the six portals from the Sphere of Amenti, the original one to Tara's past, and the five new ones into various stages of Earth's future, linked Tara's past through various time periods on Earth into Tara's future, creating a new track in time through which Earth could re-evolve into the fifth dimensional frequency band and merge with Tara. Do you have any comments on that? Because you're getting into space-time continuum where you're merging Earth with Tara. And it says here, the portals within the Sphere of Amenti served as a time portal structure through which the lost substance and the energetic thrust of Tara could be returned, and the lost souls of Tara could return to their original identity as souls incarnated upon the planet Tara.
Oh, okay. I think I'm understanding that now.
Yeah.
I was reading that as time travel, moving backwards and forwards to Earth, because in this realm, as far as I'm aware, you cannot travel backwards in time in the 3D realm. You can only travel forward. It's one of the limitations of this dimension is that backwards time travel is not possible. But that isn't the same in other dimensions. So moving back to, as you would call, Tara, then, yeah, that is the whole point of the gates and the portals. This is a free movement back to where you originate. Because beings here don't originate from here. They originate from elsewhere where they live a life, a full life, and they just come here for incarnations or reincarnations to learn principles and to learn different experiences in which to attain enlightenment. But each time they, for a better word, die here, they go back to where once they came, reflect on that, and then go through the process again. But it's the same with all of us, including me. I will need the portal at some stage to get back home.
Right.
That's purely because they're used, because interstellar travel is not a feasible possibility. You can travel from small places to small places, but you can't travel the huge distances in that time, which is why we've moved transdimensionally and why we use the portals.
Very good point. And it also says the portals within the Sphere of Amenti operated as a warp in time through which re-evolution could take place more quickly. The portals within the morphogenetic field of the Sphere of Amenti are known as the Halls of Amenti. They are the dimensional passageways one must pass through in order to ascend from Earth out of the time matrix and dimensionalized reality.
I'm not too sure about moving backwards and forwards for evolution purposes, but because I'm not, I just don't remember that and I'm not privy to it.
Right.
But I do, all I know is that they are there for the movement of us and other races backwards and forwards from different places in the universes. Not just our universe, but all universes.
Right. This is not a solitary job, folks. This is why this is so major, because it's affecting all the other universes as well. And one of the things that came through on my missions in Africa was we needed to always go back to the point of origin. This came up over and over and over again. And one of the missions that we did, we experienced that which I've described, which was, and I do believe that this was one of the six, that there was a portal, it was a time lock, it was interdimensional, and we were told over and over again that there was a cosmic gateway that was to open up for the first time in a very, very, very long time, and that new energies had come forth because of this. It involved an immense amount of galactic help, an immense amount. And an immense amount of time, because supposedly we had been working on this since February of last year. So a lot of strategy went into this. And of course, you know, me ending up in South Africa, Sophie, I was given a clarion call in July, but as you've mentioned before in another conversation, in these types of missions, you really truly are given information on a need-to-know basis. Because there's just too much at stake. And so I want people to understand that. Really start paying attention to the synchronicities and to the maybe not a warning, but just an alert or an incredible passion like Sophie has, where you've got to find the rest of your members, or you've got to find your team or whatever. This is very important for all of us at this time. I was told that this interview is very important because of the timing with what's going down within the United States, within the Federal Reserve, within the financial system. Everything is lining up. And so our time, it's kind of like, Sophie, we're like the fighter pilots that are sitting in the room waiting to get the call that it's time to fly out. You know, that's really what's going on right now. And so I just want everybody to know, Sophie and I had incredible amount of interference to get this thing going. In fact, we had it again with this time, and I had to record this through my phone.
Well, it's fourth time lucky now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I really want people to hear what she has to say. Now, talk to us a little bit about how you see the difference between a gate and a portal.
Okay. I think the best way I described it earlier was the gates, for those that are into sci-fi, it's Stargate, the TV series or the film. They're very similar. I'm sure that a lot of modern science fiction has all been developed or embellished by people that have our understanding as a way of trying to get it out into the populace. But the gates are very much like that. There's loads of them, thousands of them, and they connect through all parts of the universes. But they're for short travel. The portals are bigger. There's six of them, and they're like the junctions or the hubs that the gates need to pass through to move transdimensionally. So you'd have gates here that you can utilize to move in the 3D realms, etc., etc. But to get to other transdimensions, you'd have to go through one of the six portals. The six portals are spread out over vast imaginable distances.
Yes.
Earth sits on the precipice of one. and it's quite unique in its connection with it and its sort of closeness to it. Which is one of the reasons why the Earth is used for what it is, because it means transportation from here to wherever is a lot easier. The portals are coming into alignment, and when they do, the gates are generally open, and it's the portals that maintain where you can travel to. I suppose transdimensionally where you can travel to. With the alignment process, they all open up and allow access to everywhere. But it means it allows access to realms that are not meant to be here, like the dark forces, as you would say. That's where the issue comes. That's the problem. The last alignment was 2,000 years ago. The next one will be 100,000 years. And we're on the precipice of one now, which has already begun. The easiest way to describe, as I said earlier on a previous conversation, the easiest way to describe the portal is imagine a series of rooms, all haphazardly put together, and they all begin to line up, so they're all in a straight line. Once they're in that straight line, all the doors between the rooms open up and create a huge hallway, so you can run from one room into the next, into the next, into the next, etc., etc. Well, the idea is that we need to make sure that some of them doors can be either one way or locked. That's the whole point of the portal war, or battle, or I hate using the term war, but I suppose it will be.
Yeah, more. I would say more like a battle or a conflict, just a conflict to hold.
It would be a conflict, yeah.
Yeah, just to hold the portals opened without, you know, the dark forces intruding and impeding and, of course, you know, causing havoc once again.
Well, this has been prophesied for thousands of years through religious texts of all sorts. And it's written down as the Armageddon, the end of days, which sounds very dramatic, but it is. That's exactly what it is. And if you look for the religious texts, a lot of the four running signs of that are appearing now.
Yeah, they are.
Wow, there's so many. I mean, I don't need to go into them because people can look around or look for information themselves of the four runnings of the end of days, so to speak. But it's exactly that's the importance of it. If we fail to control this portal and it's locked open for the darker realms to come, they will have control and they will be able to stop all transdimensional travel, which means effectively where you are is where you're going to stay. And it means that as people die here, their spirits or souls or however you want to describe them will not be able to move back and they'll be stuck here. Well, what happens to them if they're stuck here? Does that mean that they don't actually die because they're trapped in that body? Would that then signify one of the writings, which is the dead will walk the earth?
Interesting. Now, what would you say, Sophie, what would you say to the people that have received information that a decree has been put out by the divine creator, if not the supreme creator, that this will happen or else, and that there will be finally kind of like, what am I trying to say? Almost like a stay given that would nullify that kind of tumultuous Armageddon unfolding.
Well, if they've been given any information, act on it. Don't dismiss it. Now it isn't the time to delay it. You need to start reaching out and
I agree.
Utilize what you've been told and contacting others that would assist you. It isn't a single person's thing. No one person will be able to do things on their own.
Correct.
Likewise, I am here as part of six. I am the one that's in charge of them. I'm the one to lead them. But without them, I'm powerless because I need to utilize all the powers that they have. But it isn't just going to be us six. I've come in contact with someone who I know is here to assist me. but is not part of my team. And we'll utilize the help of everyone. It just means that we're the front runners. We're the ones at the front line.
Right. Now tell me, Sophie, you've got to share the part about the nine realms of the dark forces. That I think that's so key for people to know.
Oh, okay. Well, there's nine lower realms, dimensions, or however you want to describe them, that are filled with darker forces. And the darker forces can't intrude into the higher dimensions or the higher realms. But they can come into this realm, and they can move freely here in whatever guise they so choose, etc., etc. And I think the way I described it last time when we tried to talk was the poles of a magnet.
Yeah.
Which is, you've got a positive and a negative pole and a bar magnet, and in between is a kind of mix-mash of the two, a weak array. Now, negative can't ever get to positive, positive can't get to negative. And it's very much the same way as the light and dark forces. Using, I don't know, positive for the light and negative for the dark, which is just coincidental. The dark can't move into the light realms because of the differences between them and just the pure frequency changes that they can't be, they can't exist in either way. And the light can't exist so much in the lower realms. But in the intermediary, in the middle, or close to the middle, they can. Well, that's the whole point, is we need to lock away these nine realms that are lower and close them off so that they're stuck there and they can't come in, they can't intrude into our realm or the higher realms.
Or just the free will of you know, those that are ascending and evolving, you know?
Yes, yes.
Period.
Well, that is their process. Because they can't evolve to that respect, they can't ascend and they can't attain enlightenment, they see it that, and the most they can get into is this realm and slightly above, is that no one else has the right to do that.
Yeah.
So they're stuck here and everyone else needs to be. Everyone else needs to be on their planes of existence.
Yeah, and that, you and I talked about this a little bit before. I believe this is another one of the reasons why it's been very difficult to track down the chemtrail locations of the dark. You know, the messages and the information that have come to me is this has been one of the difficulties for the light, is being able to track those down because it's a multidimensional kind of jumping. And these areas are hidden. So these nine realms of the dark forces that really are not an area that the light can go into. So it does make it kind of double whammy here, you know. But well, is there anything that you would like to, you know, finalize this with, and any messages you would like to give the star seeds and the guardians at this point?
Just reach out to each other. If you have an inclination that you are of a certain type or you're from a certain place, explore it. Look into it. Don't think yourself as being mad. Don't think of yourself as, you know, living in fairyland, etc., etc. If you have a feeling that that's what you are, look into it more. Explore it. Go with your gut feelings and reach out to other people. I found out since talking recently, and like talking to yourself, is that there are so many other people out there in a similar boat. I mean, I'd never even heard the term starseed in that respect.
Interesting.
And I thought that I was quite special and that there wasn't many of us around, but obviously, there are a lot of star seeds here, which essentially is what I am. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I may be on a different purpose and a different mission. I may have information that others don't. But essentially, I still would fall into that realm of being a star seed. So, be nice to each other.
Yeah.
Treat people, you know, treat people as you would like to be treated. Don't conform. Don't try to sort of upset the cart. And there's a time and a place for fighting, but it's not really a necessity. There's other ways of doing things. And believe that there is something else out there, that you're not alone, that this isn't all there is, that you can make a difference.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you for that. And if anybody wants to reach Sophie, her email address is salcat1@aol.com. Let me spell that. It's salcat1@aol.com. And she would love to hear from anybody that feels drawn to do this sort of work, or if you feel that you would like her to scan you to see if you are part of her team. She's anxious to get going and to reunite with those that she's come here to get her done. So anyway, I just want to thank you, Sophie, for coming on today, especially being so patient with all the technological issues. And I want to thank all of my audience. As always, you guys are awesome. You're so incredibly enlightened. You teach me every day how to increase my enlightenment. And I'm honored to be here to serve and protect. So love to all of you. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. And feel free to visit our blog if you are compelled to donate. This is a free service, the interviewing, the spiritual missions, and even the blog. So if you feel compelled, please support us at the donation button on the top right column. Other than that, I have not much else to say. I hope all is well, and you all take care and have a wonderful rest of the week. Bye for now, Sophie. Thank you.
No worries. See you later, everyone. Bye.
Bye.